This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome everyone to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and she broke your heart and inadvertently drove men to deviant lifestyles. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Pico Technology, Autel, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. Picoscope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. Sponsored by Independent Wrench Jobs, tech-only jobs, no runaround. Built by Technician Find, helping tech since 2017. Join free at IndependentWrenchJobs.com. I want to bring up the Challenger disaster again. Not because I like it, but I think the last discussion I had about it, I don't think a full discussion, but I brought it up. I think I was needling whatever brainiac was to bring in Richard Feynman into the kind of the review board or research board, and also just the disaster itself. But there's something I didn't talk about, and I wasn't holding it back, I guess. It's just, I don't know. It's hard to think of everything all the time. But I think there's room for discussion as to why. And I think even after that Netflix documentary on it, one can be left with the idea solely that management, under the pressure of time, overruled engineers' warnings because they did know. So if you don't know about the Challenger disaster, of course, the space shuttle blew up 73 seconds after launch in 1986. It was awful. 7 astronauts lost their lives. And the study, research, fact-finding mission as to what happened blamed an O-ring. A failed O-ring, one that failed in low temperature. It lost its flexibility, if you will, its malleability. It was no longer sealing, it hardened. That, you know, being a cold morning, launching, the way they shipped these booster rockets, those were the big white rockets, if you will, silos next to the large orange, red, it's really more orange brown fuselage, which looked just like a rocket, kind of that shape, to ship these boosters. They came in pieces and they had these O-rings and nothing different than we've ever seen and stuff we do, except this was for rocket fuel. And I guess not trying to go down the road of what powers rockets. So we'll just skip all that and go to it leaked. It was cold that morning. It was cold mornings before that, they put off the launch. Finally, they got to go. Launched, and boom, a disaster. It was tragic. The narrative is evil, inept management overruled employee / engineer / expert advice to not launch. The problem with that is it's not exactly true, at least not 100% true. There's more to it. There's a sociologist named Diane, make sure I get the name right because I say it wrong, unfortunately. Diane Vaughan is a sociologist who was looking at the data going, this doesn't make sense. Evil management, evil, you know, board members who all they cared about was money, okayed this and killed those astronauts. Maybe to a certain degree, that is true, except maybe the evil part is rough. But it's not that simple. I guess when you start thinking about things and looking into it and start digging, and things aren't so simple. We'd like to simplify things. That's what humans do. We oversimplify things. I guess arguably some of us overcomplicate things. I'm not going to name names. But in this case, okay, there's overcomplicating and then there's oversimplifying, and it's the answer is usually somewhere in the middle, right? Well, this is more complex than just we're going to lose money, we're going to lose contracts, we're going to lose the faith of the public, launch, launch, launch. The assumption is that they knew the risk, that they were looking at the risk, and somebody presented them a paper that said, this is the probability of failure. And they looked at that and said, "Nah, it's worth it. Go." But that's not exactly true. And what Diane Vaughan found was something that I think was named, she named it perhaps, or coined the term, or invented, if you will, something called normalization of deviance. And that may sound all super fancy, but you start thinking about it. We see this in shops all the time. We see this in normal life all the time. And what it is it isn't straight up risk management. It's not, I'm looking at this data and it screams warning, warning, warning. I'll do it anyways. There's still this percent chance nothing bad will happen. It's not that simple. What happened is over time, over years, what was a tolerance, or I should say what maybe a better way is years ago, what would have been out of tolerance is now intolerance. That's what happened. They knew about O-ring issues. There were signs of issues, many missions. They knew there were issues, but nothing bad happened. So the tolerance for acceptability expanded. What would have failed in 1981 passes in 1986. And when I think about this, it reminds me of another, I don't know, term's the wrong word, phrase. And I'm sure he didn't invent it, but where I've heard this and I've brought it up before is when a New York City divorce attorney, James Sexton, whose interviews, if you haven't ever watched them, I can't recommend enough. I really can't. I know some people don't much care for him, but I think what he says is important. I really do. Does he trump other experts? I don't know that he necessarily disagrees with certain experts, to be quite honest. I think he's just on a different side of things. But when asked, why do marriages fail? Why do relationships fail? How does it just happen? His response has been, it happens slowly and then all at once. That's what happened with Challenger. Not the O-ring itself, failing, 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 and then boom, it failed all the way. No. The tolerances, the acceptability over the years and over the missions, success, success, success. Yeah, there's signs of wear, but nothing happened. It was fine. Go for it. It happened very, very slowly, and then all at once, and the rocket exploded, or the shuttle exploded. Divorces, relationships crumble very slowly. Nothing's wrong. We're okay. We had a little spat. There's hurt feelings. And then one or both are done. It didn't happen like that. It started long ago. And I'm sure different people are different. Like the time, this isn't the divorce episode. Steckler and I did that already, although I don't know that we necessarily explained it. And then really, if you listen to any episode with Margaret Light, especially earlier ones with her on relationships, we go into that. And then even further with any reference to like Gottman's and marriage counseling for your shop, like there's hints to that, that things like that don't just boom happen. So Challenger explodes because of a normalization of deviance. Now let's look at shops. And the one I think most would be thinking about is ADOS. I don't know if that's a good example, to be quite honest. You know what I mean? Because I don't think it starts out where a shop is doing wheel alignments on cars that explicitly state that certain calibrations must be done afterwards. An Audi, these calibrations should be done per the manufacturer after a wheel alignment that adjusts thrust line. Okay, Well, they start out, they do it. They sublet it. They bring in a mobile tech, whatever, mobile company, send it to the dealer. They get them done. And then there's one that slips through the cracks. They don't get it done. No warning lights, no complaints, 5-star review. Customer maybe paid for the calibration, didn't get done. Maybe they got reimbursed. Maybe they didn't. Oh, we don't want them to know we didn't do it, but let's just wait and see. I don't know. Not cool. Not the right way. But that's how it starts. And then another one, like we can't get them in. The Audi dealer won't be able to do it for 2 weeks or a week. Or it's been sitting on their lot. This is the last time I'm going to send it there. It takes them forever. So it gets skipped. It gets missed. And after years, 2, 3, 4 years, maybe more, whatever, you just stop doing the calibrations. You stop quoting the calibrations. You just don't do them. Never had a problem. I don't know that I've seen anything really pop up. I've seen a couple of lawsuits and stuff against glass companies start to come up. I don't know that I've really seen a repair shop yet or even a collision shop off the cuff concerning ADAS calibrations. Some of that stuff's hard to find because it depends on where it gets, how far it gets. I think there's some stuff against dealerships, but nothing happens for how long, and then it does. I don't know what other real reference we have to something going very, very bad, tracked back to the shop that did the work, other than really tire plugging or straight up patching, not the plug-in patches or, you know, plug-in seals, whatever they call them, patch plugs, the actually authorized way to repair a tire. There's a lot of those. A lot of those type of lawsuits where a tire was just plugged or patched or even plug-in patched or patch plugged in an area that was not deemed appropriate or safe. Tire fails, something bad happens, the shop gets sued and loses. The other reference gets brought up a fair bit because I think we have to. You can't ignore it. Is the John Eagle case. This is a case against a collision shop. The vehicle, I believe was a Honda Fit, was in a collision. The collision shop repaired it. It involved replacing the roof. The thing is they used what would be deemed a very industry accepted appropriate way to install a new roof by adhesive. I don't know too many collision shops or collision techs, if you will, that would look at that and say, that's a real hacky way to fix that. Maybe there is. I'm sure there is now with this type of evidence. But the reality is most that I know would chalk that up as a good repair. That's solid. Maybe even better than the OE recommended procedure of spot welding. But that's not what they did. They adhered it. They used an adhesive. The car was in another accident. And this time, bad things happened. The collision shop was sued and lost because they didn't follow OE procedure, published OE procedure. That's why I think we like to think about ADAS is we're not doing them. We're waiting. We're waiting for something very, very bad to happen. We're rolling the dice. Maybe that's what it's going to take. I'd rather it didn't, but maybe that's what it takes is some big media driven thing, like, you know, the key programmer level stuff or bigger, where people got hurt because a shop did not have an ADAS calibration done, didn't do the calibrations, didn't do them right, didn't document it, something like that. I wish it wouldn't come to that. I wish we'd just do the calibrations and the shops that aren't doing them, not throwing the shops that are, per the manufacturer's recommendations, throwing them under the bus. That makes no sense to me. I'm not big on throwing anyone under the bus, really, but it would make more sense for the shop that's trying to follow procedure, throwing the shop or tech or whoever, for not doing them against OE recommendations. At least that's somewhat logical. You know, I don't think it's a great long-term plan, but at least it's reasonable. The shops that are not following OE procedure are demonizing the shops that are. That's awesome. Just ridiculous. So yeah, now we have to educate clients about that too. And then what do you do with that? Shop is now just throwing a you know, shop facility trying to do things the right way, following the procedure set by the manufacturer that built the thing. Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and installation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADAS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. Ever feel like you've got to play politics just to get fed? One guy gets the gravy, you get the garbage, and then the ad says, great culture. Independent Wrench Jobs is a new tech-only community to help you find better independent shops, fair dispatch, steady work, real leadership, no games. Start with the free salary survey for your city, shop-by-shop pay, perks, and benefits before you waste another interview. And if you're applying now, use Autotech Resume Pro to generate a resume and shop-specific cover letter in about 2 minutes. Built by Technician Find, serving the industry since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. Maybe a better one would be torque sticks. Maybe when you first start your shop, or a new manager comes in and you're not allowed to use your torque sticks anymore, that every vehicle has the wheels torqued to spec using a torque wrench. And those torque wrenches are calibrated however often, quarterly, every 6 months, a year, whatever. And you're to follow those to the letter. And then the client is to return with their vehicle. They're asked to return after a week or two, you know, whatever day, a week, we'll just say a week, however many days, but we'll say a week for a retorque, free of charge. Somebody will drop everything to go retorque those wheels ASAP. And that's how things are done for years. And then, I don't know, somebody comes in, they're using their torque sticks or they're skipping the retorques. And this goes on for a while, a little bit. And they get, you know, reprimanded, all the things, but nothing bad happens. Maybe they bring you out and show you, like, hey, look, I'll use this torque stick. Now I'll take the torque wrench to it. See, it's the same. It's tight. And over time, over years, little more deviance, little more. Not fully engaged with the retorques, not retorquing anymore. Not fully on board with the torque sticks. But it wasn't a big no-no like it was. And then after a while, everybody's using torque sticks. And there's many people right now listening who have been using torque sticks for years and never had a problem. Ever. Well, there's a lot of shops that do tire plugs. They've never had a problem. There's millions and millions and millions and millions of miles on tires that have been plugged. No problem. It's not a problem until it is. And then it's a big problem. Or, okay. It could be a big problem. So with the torque sticks, I don't know. Somebody buys a new impact. The old one maxed out at, I don't know, 300 foot-pounds, 400 foot-pounds. And now they got the new whatever, electric, air, or pneumatic, whichever. That thing's got like 700 or more. I don't know, just for the sake of discussion, right? Well, now the Torx stick that's supposed to be, you know, I don't know, 100 foot pounds. It's a bit more. And I'm not saying it's proportional or anything like that. Like, don't get me wrong. It will still be limited. Or, I don't know, maybe something other more reasonable is somebody messed with the impact or they lowered the output, lowered the torque, if you will, and forgot to turn it back up. I don't know. Just something where something is now different. The torque wrench wouldn't have made that mistake. It really couldn't have unless it was left out of calibration for a long time and it was way out of calibration. And then maybe that's the deviance where you used to have them calibrated regularly, and then because they never were out of calibration, you stopped having them calibrated, and then one started to go out of calibration over years. And now it's under torquing or over torquing. And the over torquing maybe breaks lug nut, or I should say lug studs, or under torques, and after a while they kind of go loose and we don't do the retorques anymore. Bad things can happen. Really, really bad things. I think there's so many different things in a shop and other businesses. Don't get me wrong. It's not limited to auto repair, but there's so many things, so many procedures. Somebody set up an SOP, shop operating procedure, or standard operating procedure that had the best of intentions, which was A, to deliver quality to the client, to protect the shop, protect the reputation, protect it from liability, all the things. But because nothing bad happened as that veered off or started to, you know, deviate away, started to move away outside of certain tolerances, the tolerances over time start to expand very, very slowly. And then all at once. And that's why you should pick up a copy of The Challenger Launch Decision by Diane Vaughan, sociologist. Or just keep in mind that sometimes the bad things don't happen because of somebody looking. And I think this is a very important point about what normalization of deviance really means. It's not like a manager is presented with some data that says, hey, I torqued these lug nuts to 150 foot-pounds. The spec is 90. And a manager looking at that going, yeah, what are the chances something happens? Like, you know, it's worth the risk. Let it go. Versus somebody looking at the data going, this, they use torque sticks. And then maybe not even looking at the data so much. They just know what's going on. Like, I remember when I first started here, they would have never let us use torque sticks. That's normalization of deviance. It's just not somebody that knows the risk and going like, yeah, it's all right. We'll be okay. I'm sure we'll be okay. It's that the tolerance itself moved over the years. We used to torque things to exactly specification. And over time, we started to look the other way on 10%, 20%. And now it's, you know, 150%. And it's within spec, our tolerance of acceptability. Like, oh, it should be okay. You might not even say it that way. You might just be like, don't even think about it. That's what it is. And I think it happens on the shop floor. I think it happens just in KPIs. I think it happens in people's behaviors and their relationships, all of it. Think about what used to be a certain way. And I'm not saying be rigorous in areas where evolution shouldn't occur. But on the flip side, when there is a reason for a tight tolerance, and because nothing bad happened, it's okay. And just that becoming the new normal. Like, I would never call my girlfriend a name, and then we're engaged, and I really would never call her a name. And well, then we had that one fight and I called her a name, but she didn't get that mad. And then more arguments. And then I'm just calling her a name in every argument, but nothing bad happens. We don't have more arguments because of it. It's just now that tolerance has been expanded. I personally would have never done that, but through time and acceptance, it's being allowed. And then we're married, and arguments, or just maybe not just arguments, just little spats, you know, little frustrations, not even close to arguments, but there's name calling. That would have never, ever, ever happened. But because of time and acceptance, their tolerance, my tolerance has changed. Maybe their tolerance hasn't, but mine has, because there hasn't been any repercussions until one day I come home and she's not there anymore. And she's had enough. That last, it wasn't even a spat. Like, she said something and I responded with a name and that was it. She was done. This didn't really happen to me. I'm just using it as an example of tolerances expanding. My personal tolerances. Maybe hers didn't. Maybe should have the other way. She should have set boundaries. Different discussion. Same thing happens over and over and over. And we need to be aware of it and understand that it's not foul play. It's not somebody being nefarious. It's actually natural. I hope you got a kick out of that or see some value in that. Go watch the Netflix documentary. Go pick up the book or just think about it. Think about just all the stuff in the shop. And it could be little stuff. Maybe it's uniforms. You know, used to require everyone wear a uniform and it's just gotten a little more lax. Everyone had to wear protective footwear. Now they don't. Used to be really anal about safety glasses. Now we don't. At least, you know, when they're using tooling that should require that. Used to be super vigilant about training. It just, after a while, there hasn't really been anything in we couldn't do. So yeah, we don't push it like we used to. Those are all examples. And be aware of something going awry, something failing very, very slowly all at once. So that's how I will leave you. Thank you so very much for listening. Really appreciate it. If you're on YouTube, please leave comments. Love to hear examples of this in your shop. If you guys are doing stuff to fight against it. Yeah, anything like that. If you get a chance, give a thumbs up. It really helps. Subscribe so you can stay on top of new episodes. And yeah. Thank you to our sponsors, Autel, Pico Technology, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Thank you to the Aftermarket Radio Network for letting me do this. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.